Blog Talk Radio.
Good to have you sitting in with us today. The Sonic Effects. It starts off, seems to start off so innocuous and can be so slight. Well, I'll just sit down and do it. But, you know, there's something about, there's something that happens when we get together. It's like, je ne sais quoi. It's like, I don't know. It's like we can be very cordial, which we tend to, and then it just explodes. The ideas just expand. They start to affect us. Don't you find that it draws something out of us that we might not be ready to talk about with just any stranger. Not so much as a competition. You know, you hear that when little boys are competing with each other and kicking dust on each other's boots. You know, I'm first, and I hear that a lot around where I am in this precinct. We spend a great deal of energy. We do. You can see it through our documents, talking about being first or being part of it. And we like our pictures. Oh, my goodness. We do like we want those acknowledgements. It's, you know, it's all about the politics of it all. I'm talking about the more mature, more self-confident fellow the ideas just are there. Then they're willing to engage. The nicest experiences are being around some of the, you know, very thoughtful brethren, and finding that they're so receptive to the conversation. So receptive. It's not that it's an act of kindness. It's an act of curiosity, boys and girls. The curiosity is by pulling up a chair with you and I. There's an entire possibility that we will have an exchange of ideas. And even if it's as simple as experiencing the joy that you have or the verisimilitude that comes to the forefront, it's learning. It's not a waste of time. Now, of course, there are the other people, and you've met them too, that have a penchant for needing to cover up their own frailty. And they do that by carrying on as if there's some, as if the divine light is shining out of their orifices. we can't really do much. They're left to their deathbed with that hope that the penny will drop and they'll find that the whole world is just a big mirror reflecting back to them what they are, what we are, what we do. It's all new. It's all new. This idea of modifying our character, living the good life. When you hear about it, does it seem onerous, or does it fit into something, a drink of water to a parched man in a desert island, or is it that war, that pushback? Like, oh my goodness. If I admit this, if I absorb this, then it must mean that somehow I am not what I appear to be in my own mind. Yes. Yeah, the truth sometimes has that effect. And it's in large part determined by lived experience. The life that you lived before we came together, before we came into masonry. Oh. But today, I'm shifting my thinking to something more interesting. Yes, I have one of those. I don't think this is COVID-like. It's more just a bit of a nuisance cold. And I can tell you, I have a cure in my favorite cup right here with me, too. And I hope we'll have a break for music coming up if you haven't topped up your cup with your favorite libation, then there will be ample opportunity, because we do better when we can relax a little bit. Yeah. We have created a decent program today, attentive sorry, you just have to bear with me. Attentive to the ideas of Freemasonry. And it made me think, I've been thinking lately in writing more about context. And the context is just what I refer to as an embrace. It isn't, but it's comfortable for me to think that way. It makes sense to me. The idea is, the simple part is that we can talk about being open-minded, but you really need to bring that. You really need to bring that. It's a good environment, because the draw of masonry also brings forward fellas that can't do that. And you and I can, they're useful to us all, because they are the example. They're the example that you tell your children, don't be an idiot or you'll grow up something like that. you want to be able to have some dignity and something that my grandfather, lovely man, would talk about is reputation. The one of the more important things to men like us to people like us, the human quality, is the understanding our reputation and preserving the best parts of it. Never quite giving up on ourselves, but never being so cocky as to assume that when progress is going to happen. Just hang on. The stock market always returns. Well, that's so gerrymandered. That's so manipulated. I don't think we want to apply that kind of thinking, that kind of ethic to our lives. My goodness, no. Today, things fall together. And I don't quite, I won't say that I ignore it. I strive for that all the time. And today I think I found, the poetry that we're going to get into is, I think, just exquisite. And I can't for the life of me tell you when I saw this again, why I had it's taken this long to put it into this show. I'm talking about William Shakespeare and his work, Seven Ages of Man. Yeah, you probably are quite familiar with it. And if you aren't yet, I hope you will be when the program ends. And he's delightfully controversial in it. It's just a treat. But we'll use that poem as a allegorically to open us up to life experience. You know, life continues on, and we want to cover it. But I think myself that there's something more than just seven dates on a calendar. And there's some delightful analysis to help us here, just to start the conversation. And by the way, I think it's your round. I don't mean to be pushy, but that's why I'm coughing here. It's your round, and you haven't stepped up there, mate. And if you could, a little tea with honey would be very, very in order. Maybe if you threw in a little bit of rum, you scroungy bugger, it wouldn't kill you. You know, medicinal today. So the medicinal program, not Aleister Crowley chemical wedding kind of medicinal, but we're going to talk about the stages, and you might shrug it off. And I hope, you know, a lot of it, for some it might be, oh yeah, you know, we move on, we're on that spectrum of life, and then we're not. But I think we always are. And I think life continues on. And here I'm going to pull up your chair, and you know, because you helped me take myself far more seriously. We don't walk around pondering these things. We're not picking lint out of our navel. We get on with the business of living. And then all of this kind of analysis, these kind of topics are for me a look over our shoulder at where we came, and looking at yesterday's, all that string of yesterday's to just, Without anything malevolent about it, just what have we been doing? You know, where have we been? And when we do that, we run the risk. We run a risk of thinking, oh my goodness, if we have a bleak outlook about ourselves, then it's easy when we're looking over our shoulder to think, oh my goodness, we haven't come that far. And I know the truth. I'm still the same. Leopards don't change their spots. You know, all that kind of thing. Or here, cup half full kind of person, come a long way, made it this far. The perfection of life is like the perfection of the universe. It's about forces and play that we don't always understand, but they do have effect. So. And our understanding becomes is enriched because we're doing research. We have all of our some talented people continuing to follow up on the last finding that generated another explosion of questions. For the fellow that is wanting some certainty in life, well, if we look at those big, when we start to at least consider that these forces are around us and we don't always recognize them and we don't always identify, but that doesn't stop them from happening. It's like saying a man doesn't understand or appreciate ethics, but ethics still applies to him. Is that the way we think? Is there an ethical way that applies to all 8 billion of us? I kind of think there's some comfort in that conversation. Do we, and you know, I don't mean to sound childish, do we are we born with that sense of right and wrong? I think we begin to, we have the notion, and then life helps us to put words to it, to define it. You know, what is it that we're talking about? And I find that depends on what we're, I think, depends too on our awareness. Grace of Masonry is to assist in recognizing our own capacity to define a good life, to think our own ability to claim to understand that we are multifaceted. That there is no, that there are, there's confusions around us. That as much as we will be, we may be determinists, we may be deists, we may be looking for some connections. We may be picking up on coincidence and thinking of them as models of a cosmic interference or cosmic purpose, as fanciful as all that. I'm not going to say that when I read Alice in Wonderland that I'm reading it literally, but then again, if you hand me the Gospel of St. Thomas, I don't read that literally either. But it begins to fill in the mindset of the people that have been handling these ideas. So the mindset, you know, what was the purpose and the politics? The politics, that ongoing, that's a conversation that we need. It's not like an imposition. It's something that we need. And yes, in our natural state, we can exist comfortably without bureaucracy, but it's hard. And when we get large numbers of people, bureaucracy just makes sense. We need to represent so that it's messy, you know, we live in these, we endorse these sense of democracy, but it's messy. It's messy because we want to have a say and we want to talk and we want to think it through. And we're encouraged. That's part of the deal, isn't it? That we have the agency, and we are going to be heard, and that the ultimate power around us is with the people that authorize this authority and how it's used. Yeah, it's simple stuff. It's simple stuff. In a way, more fascinating is this idea that we are. Still, and listen to me, it's a bit arrogant to think that the Age of Enlightenment would have answered all the questions. Well, it raised, for every time we find a new piece of the science, the questions just explode on us. And we're finding that now. You know, we've set up this amazing telescope, the James Webb Telescope, and it's seeing things that we didn't expect to see. It's looking back 13 billion years in time. And my goodness, there's things that we're seeing, so they must be there. And we can't explain it. That's beautiful. Our models up to this point don't explain. We don't explain how that long ago whole galaxies shouldn't have been formed, but the pictures are showing us that wasn't the case, that we do have, there are galaxies, very well developed, large galaxies. So who knew? And for somebody that's a more concrete person, they might begin to think, there. So what you were thinking at any given time is wrong. Well, if your world is, and I've had somebody try to convince me that they are a binary thinker, the black and white, but they don't live in black and white terms are quite austere, and they don't live according to that way. They live to take advantage of and they see themselves. The fact that they bring it up obviously tells me that they're struggling with it, struggling with truths and honesty and things like that. Although, you know, the language that's used is shielded. We aren't just putting on the rose-colored glasses, but I'll be honest with you, I want to. There's days when I just want to have those rose-colored glasses. We can approximate that, I guess, if we're sitting down with a good bottle of port and we're sharing that. The rose-colored glasses, I don't get a red film over my eyes, and I'm not prone to that raging kind of stuff. Although there is the potential, I guess, in all of us, but I'm not prone to it. It's more the pink rose-colored glasses. Eh? Sometimes I just want to slip them on just to see what the world is like. And every time I do, it's disappointing. It's like, yeah, it's like a fantasy. I don't want to live a fantasy. I don't want to live an illusion. I don't want to surround myself with people that encourage that. And I don't always want to be on this point of question, the liminal state. You know, I don't like that any more than you do. So masonry has offered me more comfort. All it's doing in a way is saying it's all right to question. It's all right to question. But when you're sifting through the ideas, here are some really, really interesting ideas for you to consider there, boy. Here are. And here are some interesting combinations of ideas that would, you know, just think about them. We're not going to tell you what you find, but try this approach, and then we'll sit down and talk about what the experience has been like for you. Oh, before you get into that, oh my goodness, you know, buckle in. If it's pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting, pretty fulfilling. Yeah. Then we'll talk later about the effect of poetry on us, I'll wait for you to talk about the effect of music on you. It's only the amount of time. It's only the time that separates the music. It's the only time that makes the music here. This is an excursion into a collaboration between two, Martin Sazé and Scott Hamilton. This was done in the Club Yardbird in Germany, and it just sizzles. They were in Cologne last October. It sizzles.
Have that kind of music around us.
Maybe this will be music to you as well. Attentive to the ideas of Freemasonry. It is unsettling to say this, but perhaps curiosity has gotten the better of common sense. I want the experience. I want to judge for myself the influence of ancient landmarks, to articulate the function of masonry, and to begin building my personal cathedral.
enough has been written, assuming we share a sense of ambivalence. It's hard to deny the value of pausing just to reflect. I like that it comes to us from poets and scientists alike, you know, observations, ways of thinking outside of ourselves. If we are capable enough to listen, I have to say, I always add those little, I don't know, it's like the, you know, the drogue that you throw out behind your sailboat in a storm. It's like it's a drag, but it's a purposeful drag. I can't say masonry is a means of excising demons from one's character. Guilt is a strong motivator, after all. But I can say masonry shows the fruitlessness found in the pursuit of catastrophizing. We also learn to make by making mistakes, some more costly than others, but we learn because we have no choice, learn or burn. We aren't born with the advantages of life experienced. We may not be complete blanks, but we absorb meaning from the people and events that surround us. What we assume to be conclusive when we are young often than not is more opinionated than factual. It's nicer to call us masons than curios. That's what we are. Curious. Curious about the world and the people of our community. We are only huge until we compare our lot with the universe. Small blue dot orbiting in a Goldilocks atmosphere inhabited by a species that exists nowhere else. And our struggle is overridden by consciousness because we absorb more information than we can process in a given moment. I tell you, masonry is a mnemonic without expecting you to believe it. You would find out for yourself. It triggers expansive reasoning, seeing differences and opposites as simply places on spectrums. We know experiences and knowledge can change behavior and thinking. We know that. We do not know how to kill integrity and authenticity and genuineness. Kill what we don't know, kill the strange. But we cannot stop the entire global community from introducing itself and reflecting our nature. We are social creatures. We like that. We like the groups. We are curious. And when I think of the comment by my dear, dear friend, very beautiful Mason, John, everybody likes to be acknowledged. But there's something underneath that. Everyone needs some level of affirmation that they exist, not whether they're right or wrong. I think at the end of the day, every man craves to be treated with and have his ideas treated as if they are honest and have some purpose. And instead, we find that we find frailty. We're curious, just curious.
Dave Brubeck. Yeah. Yeah, that Dave Brubeck. Here. In case overlooked this, there is some benefit to poetry. It's like I don't think it's quite old fashioned to think that, you know, our studies, the liberal arts, is that old fashioned? Is reading philosophy, is that old fashioned? Is studying history? How about that? I think masonry and poetry serve some interesting purposes. There are reasons. There are things that happen. There are advantages. And I won't begin to explain why it's not more widespread. It's like a lot of things, you know, there's some tremendous benefits, but not everybody embraces them, even though some of it is kind of obvious. Some of it isn't. We can talk about masonry being good for developmental learning. We can. We can talk about what when we start to, and I'm not very comfortable with the term Masonic anything. Masonic Bible doesn't exist, but I hear that. Masonic poetry, because it just narrows down. It just eliminates all the rest. Narrows our thinking. We begin to think that's what, you know, that's what the excitement is about, because somebody gives us a word and tells us. Poetry is a literary work in which a special intensity is given to the expression of feelings and ideas, using a distinctive style and a rhythm. In poems collectively or as a genre of literature. Poetry tends to be those written words which are short in phrase or sentence and long in emotion, wanting to evoke sympathy or empathy in the reader. Poetry may take stiff rhythmic inflection, or it may be flowing, more akin to prose. So Auden or Shakespeare or Solomon, poetry has struck a chord in human consciousness for thousands of years, and its popularity has not waned in modernity. Poetry in a modern mindset may not feel very relevant. We have literature-wise moved from very constructed and structured forms of poetry to the latter 20th and early 21st century use of exploded syntax, compound words and disjointed phrasing. Modern poetry uses the impact of singular language to convey emotions based on the listener's personal experience. So it assumes these experiences and assumes right for a lot of us. While this is true of all poetry, the poetry of the 18th and 19th and early 20th centuries were far more lyrical and visual, wrapping the listener into not only the emotional impact of words, but drawing them into a mindset where those emotions were relevant. So I'll come back one day, maybe next week. Today we're working on a piece of Shakespeare, but I'll do it. We'll get into Victor by W.H. Auden as an example of this. And then doesn't this very much explain the struggle, the shortcomings of a lot of men who have difficulty processing their own emotional state? Better that they stay and fix their attention on what they're doing than why they're doing it or how it makes them feel. So I'll just presume that Carl Cloudy sitting in, and over there is Mark Twain and Joseph Fort Newton and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and Walter Scott. You're at the table, and Oscar Wilde and Rudyard Kipling.
Now there, that quiet one, Manly Palmer Hall, the Canadian, Canadian, imagine. And Alexander Pope, what's up with your artwork? Man, that's... So reading some Masonic poems, it's clear that while there is form and structure, there are varying degrees of illustration. Brother Robert Burns wrote specifically about becoming a Mason. It has a lyrical style and dancing emotion with little meaning to the non-Mason. So when it, these things are, seem to be impactful for some, but not for others. I think you, let me suggest what you're seeing is a barometer telling us about the presence of the Masons and the truth, and an uncomfortable truth. We can dress somebody up and put an apron on them, but that doesn't make them a Mason. Oh my goodness. They'll identify. Oh yeah, there's a lot, of course, the prestige and the reputation. You want to identify. That's a want. But the connection, the Masonic connection is about need. And so when we walk in a room and we see, we can tell how much masonry is in the room by the reaction. By the reaction. Isn't that just a bugger, eh? Here, so a little bit about the import and the impact of poetry. We're going to tackle William Shakespeare's Seven Ages of Man. So I'll give you what a bit of a breakdown, and then as we go through it, see if you find those things are evident to you, or perhaps it's something entirely different. It said the poem Seven Ages of Man is a part of the comedy As You Like It, and it's a speech of a philosopher, Jacques, talking to Duke Seigneur. This poem is one of the most famous works because its first phrase, all the world's a stage. Shakespeare compares the world with a stage, and every living person is described as an actor who plays seven different parts on that stage. And the descriptions of every stage are brief, but very lively and colorful because it's precisely choosing figures of speech. And to make his point, Shakespeare uses seven examples of common actions that man goes through during his life. It is as an infant who cries in the arms of his nurse. And then he grows to a schoolboy trying to skip the school. And the third stage is an enamored young man, lovesick, and composing a ballad to his love. Next one is a grown-up soldier, ambitious, devoted to his vows, and short-tempered. Later, a soldier retires and becomes a judge, using all the wisdom of his age. The sixth actor is shown aging, in his home clothes, losing the sharpness of mind and strength of body. The last age of man is returning to the infant stage, losing one's sight, ability to taste and hear, and slowly going into oblivion. Or in my field, what's known as the angel's kiss. It's rich. This one's rich in metaphor, brethren. All the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. Oh, they have their exits and entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages. At first, the infant mewling and puking in the nurse's arms. Then the whining schoolboy with his satchel and shiny morning face, creeping like snail unwillingly to school. And then the lover, sighing like furnace, and a woeful ballad made to his mistress's eyebrow. Then a soldier, full of strange oaths and bearded like the bard, jealous in honor, sudden and quick in quarrel. seeking the bubble reputation, even in the cannon's mouth. And then the justice, in fair round belly with good cape unlined, with eyes severe and beard in formal cut, full of wise saws and modern instances. And so he plays his part. The sixth age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon, with spectacles on nose and pouch on side, his youthful hose well saved, a world too wide for his shrunk shank, big manly voice, turning again towards childish treble, pipes and whistles in his sounds. Last scene of all that ends this strange, eventful history is second childishness and mere oblivion. Sans teeth, sans eyes, sans taste, sans everything. A little too much honesty there, William. It's never too painful to listen to Keith Jarrett at the keyboards. Today, this is the portion of the show where we tip our hat to history. History. We study history because it teaches us skills. Oh, no. Pardon me. I'm not going to explain what those skills are. You don't have them now if you haven't studied them. You could have if you studied them. They would have to be important to you. That process of discovery, like a traveler, the journey and destination, which is the most important to you? Which do you get? Which do you value? I like to think sometimes it's the destiny, the destination, and sometimes it's the journey itself. Here, I found this part of the history, the way Margaret Jacobs put it together, was, well, it's frankly more than I expected from a piece of history. One of the most distinctive characteristics of continental Freemasonry is incessant creation of new degrees. Well, we needed to put some constraints on this, and our Constitution helped us do that, yeah? We're talking here within French Freemasonry. In particular, the custom of elaborate grades and degrees became quite commonplace. It's like, well, right, we have a new way of expressing these deeper philosophies. So why not? Why not? And exactly. Yet rather than see the degrees as simply expressions of the mystical and romantic, which by the 1780s they could certainly be, we should also see them as capable of reflecting the ideal of becoming enlightened. Something to think about, the ideal of becoming enlightened. In Paris in 1778, still aristocracy was dripping. The Lodge Amy Reun, R-E-U-N-I-S, practiced 12 degrees.
And some, such as Le Chevalier de Lorient, the Knight of the East, reflected aristocratic effects. Others, like the Seventh Degree of the Rose Croix, invoked a fashionable mysticism. Among the higher degrees came the Philosophie Inconnue, and the Unknown Philosopher, and still higher, Le Sublime Philosophy. At the same decade, other French lodges created the degree of Symbolic Master. Representing this degree, the brothers stood in silence, like a, quote, lugubrious light enlightened us, and we are made to enlighten the universe. I kind of like that. The initiate represented Solomon, who, enlightened by a divine wisdom, instructs his subjects. In these ceremonies, the enlightenment is still brought full circle. Having disdained traditional religion as it is being enlisted in the service of a new religiosity. Here, this was really quite gripping for me, gentlemen. As early as 1755, French Freemasons said that, end quote, the true Mason is not only virtuous, he is at the same time a philosophy. A word borrowed during the 1740s to mean an adherent of the secular and the free thinking. That's philosophy, P-H-E, at the end. When used in the context of the Enlightenment, the word meant not a philosopher in the sense of Descartes or Newton, but rather a man possessing particular characteristics. These are your characteristics. Reasonable, sociable, virtuous. He is perfect, as one orator put it. With such sentiments about the capacities of enlightened men, naturally came optimism. As one orator began, I am truly persuaded that in our time, barbarity and superstition and ignorance are disappearing. The illuminations of truth are penetrating all spirits, insinuating themselves into all hearts, eternalizing forever the Masonic reign, because the Masonic art speaks of reason, which must be actualized of necessity in the century of philosophy. Freemasonry is being presented as the embodiment of its age, a new movement with ancient roots, the harbinger of the age of reason. In Dutch lodges, the newly elected master addressed his predecessor and begged him to, quote, enlighten me with your profound illuminations. When in 1760 a lodge was officially established in Utrecht, university town, brothers wrote to it to offer congratulations. We are charmed to see the light shine in a city where until now the thickness of darkness had not permitted even the tiniest sparkle to pierce the clouds of ignorance and prejudice. Once in possession of these illuminations, brothers believed that they could bring their superb edifice to a higher point of perfection. Perfection never possessed otherworldly connotations in this new secularism. True fraternity and equality stood as the ideals sought by every lodge. Oh, there we have it. We're wrapping up another program. We're pulling away from the table. We have things to do. This is a time we put aside for each other. It's been interesting, as it always is. I like the conversation. You bring a lot to it. Think about what we've heard today. It's interesting. This is ascribing certain traits, describing us.
Well, I'm not sure I like to be described that way. Somebody saying that I'm the embodiment of enlightened values, I'm not so sure. I'm not quite sure I live up to that. But I want to. Somewhere in the recesses, it's not like memory work. It's more a reminder of something that's already inside of us. That's all. The epitome of enlightenment, well, you remember the brother saying that he hoped that barbarity would come to an end. People would gain their senses and stop the attacks on each other and find a way of coexisting and living and loving and building a world that combines our shared beliefs. We haven't reached that yet, but it is an effort that people within every nation strive. There's always those voices. So it's like, how do we put an end to the bullies? We begin to anticipate them, and we know, you know, just stand up to them. They're usually not that bright. And when they are, they're not that clever. And when they pass, they become another line in the list of fools. We can continue to learn, or we can just draw a line and say, from this point on in my life, my brain has too many thoughts in it, so I'm going to just become opinionated. We see that more coming from silly old men. You know, they're so unpleasant, they can't even exist in their own skin, and they feel that they have that right. You know, it must be a thrill for them to actually berate somebody and then wait and then learn that most people won't say anything back to them, as if that gives them license to continue it. Nobody, it's fascinating. Nobody walks up to them and say, do you have any idea how stupid you sound? That's our secret. It's like, man, it is what it is. Next week, we're going to pick this up probably some way enhancing this sense of journey. Masonry offers a curated course of life, doesn't it? It puts out the concepts. It is like a university or philosophy. It puts out concepts, exposes us to them. And that doesn't dictate, you know, that's not an ideology. That's a calculus. It becomes part of a calculus. And you and I are the people that either use or don't use that. The truth about Masonry is the truth inside of you. You embrace it, you don't. So join us next week. Pull up your favorite spot. Maybe put a log on the fire. Maybe look out over the horizon or find a quiet spot. We're not going to be interrupted for a little while. And we'll pick up the conversation again. Would that be all right? I'd like that. Meantime, commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Random. And if you do it anonymously, it really messes up the bigots and bullies, because you're never really sure. Never really sure. It could be the enemy treating them with a kindness, and they will never, ever know. Yeah, look, takes us out of this show. Pretty decent. I look forward to seeing you again.